Enrico Fermi. Now, there's a popular mythology that Fermi, when with other associates, was leaving Los Alamos at lunch. They'd been talking about it would only take a couple million years to colonize the entire galaxy. And so as they were leaving, Fermi, who was famous for asking questions as a teaching tool, I went to the University of Chicago because he was there. He died while I was there. It had nothing to do with me. I don't mean that. But, uh-oh, here comes Friedman. Oh. You know. But what he said was, so where is everybody? He didn't say there's nobody coming here, and it's a legitimate question. And my answer is, I don't know where everybody is, but I know some of them are coming here, and the government knows a great deal and isn't telling us anything about what they know. But people say, it's the Fermi paradox, it's called. There's a whole book about it. There are hundreds of explanations for what people meant. The simplest is he had some inkling that there was stuff going on, and he was asking that question. You know, what's the best explanation? Fermi had a security clearance. He put together the first nuclear chain reaction for building the bomb. And he was present when the bomb was set off, incidentally. He had presence of mind to sprinkle little pieces of paper for when the shockwave came by, and by measuring the distance they went from where he had dropped them, he could tell the power of the blast. Fermi was a physicist. When he died, his colleagues, who were no mean shakes either, spoke of him with awe, because he was both an experimentalist and a theoretician. That's very unusual. So people have misrepresented what he said. And one of the ironies of this is Fermi's wife, Laura, was Jewish. So when he went to get his Nobel Prize in Oslo in 1938, Mussolini, they were living in Italy, and Mussolini was clamping down a la Hitler. They went to Oslo, went to the United States, and never went back to Italy. And there were a number of other people working on the nuclear weapons program who got to the United States because of Hitler's nastiness in Europe. Served him right is all I can say. Because if he had had all these guys, he might have gotten there before we did. Which is a very scary thought indeed. But don't let anybody tell you that Fermi said there were no visitors from any elsewhere. Where is everybody? There's my book. I think I have a couple of copies left. And by a miracle of great proportions, my box of books wound up coming here this afternoon. Thanks to Ishmael's daughter who called and said, the books are here. And I've been pestering them, of course. Where are my books? I sent them. Well, they arrived. And most of them are gone, but there's a few left. I don't know. But there have been past discussions about grand alignments, and nothing really has come of them, except they do make it more convenient if you're going to check on the outer planets to launch your rocket so that they get there when they're lined up. You can go past several of them. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with the Mayan calendar. I think they ran out of stone. And I've heard that the Mayans, today's Mayans, if you will, have all said that the story is not that the world ends at that time. It takes a new turn. That's a big difference. So I'm not ready to lay down and say, hey, let's have a ball because everything's coming to an end at the end of December. My wife's birthday is the end of December. Maybe we should have a party if we live that long, 28th. That's pushing it, but what the heck. So I have no reason to say anything's going to happen. There are always alignments and other things going on, and you can attach whatever significance you want to them. I will say this. In the chapter in Science Was Wrong, we have a chapter on global the climate business, anthropogenic global warming, man-induced. And incidentally, don't believe what you hear. CO2 is not the villain. I get a kick out of people saying, ban CO2. Every living plant on the planet needs CO2. It's not a pollutant. And the temperatures were higher at times when there wasn't any man-made CO2 around. So you're getting a bad scoop. Now, there's guys with a vested interest, the IPCC. They got plush jobs, great opportunities to be somebody. And don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. And, they told you that the glaciers were melting. No, they weren't. Yes, it's been warmer in the north and colder in the south. Antarctica is warmer than usual, colder than usual, where the Arctic is warmer than usual. Nature goes through cycles. Sorry, that's the way it is. You can't control them. So don't be worried. As a matter of fact, they're going broke in England and Germany, putting out all kinds of subsidizing money for windmills, which are very inefficient and so forth, and which the public has to pay for, and which don't work all the time. I'm sure it comes as a surprise to everybody that the wind doesn't blow all the time, and the sun doesn't shine all the time. Isn't that amazing? 45 windmills in the northern part of New Brunswick stopped when the weather got too cold and froze everything. So you can rate the windmill at 100 kilowatts. And once in a while, it'll produce that much. Much of the time, it won't. So there's a lot of popular mythology, if you will. And you got to be careful. And I know there are people who say, oh, he's full of baloney. Well, there's a chapter in Science Was Wrong where I cite chapter and verse as to why I say what I say about it. So I don't know of any grand alignment that's going to do anything to hurt anything. That's different from saying there isn't a grand alignment. I don't know. That's what people are saying. I wasn't around the last time. I don't expect I'll be around the next time, after this one, anyway. So there are a lot of these things where you got people pushing their own petty theories because it sounds good, and who's going to check on them? They get a lot of press coverage. Scientists fears terrible event to happen, Rumor mongering is a great way to get press. Was that the English article? And they said it's been going down, and I read that article, baloney from beginning to end. The number of sightings wasn't decreasing. How many UFO sightings are there? Well, if I check my normal lecture audiences, I get 10% of them believe they've seen one. When I ask how many of you reported what you saw, 90% of the hands go down. So your view of what's going on, you're looking at a small subset. And if the press coverage is good, maybe it goes up to 20% reported instead of 10. Oh, twice as much. Only 5% reported. Only half as much. Oh, my goodness, nothing's happening. But you never see the support of research. The reference is saying, according to this study done by so-and-so and published hither or yon. And so I saw the article. I was not impressed, to say the least. Sorry. That's as bad as the article about only kooks see UFOs by the British Astronomer Royal. Other questions. Robert Scott Lazar. Yes, go to my website, www.stantonfriedman.com, and you'll find an article about the fraud of Bob Lazar. That tells you where I'm coming from. But a quick look at things. Most of you have probably heard of Bob Lazar. He claimed to have been a nuclear physicist with a master's in physics from MIT and another one in electronics from Caltech, worked at Los Alamos, got hired by Area 51 to back engineer UFOs. Figure out how they work. And the kicker is I got asked about them all the time because I'm a nuclear physicist and, here's a fellow scientist, et cetera. So first of all, I checked the American Physical Society and the American Nuclear Society. I belong to both. He doesn't belong to either. Second, I checked with MIT, 5 different people there. Nobody ever heard of him. Third, I checked with his high school and found out that he finished in the bottom third of his high school class. He couldn't possibly have gotten into MIT. You got to be in the top 10 or 20%. I checked at Caltech. They never heard of him. At a talk he gave, he announced as somebody who would remember him from physics department at Caltech, William Duxler. I found Dr. Duxler. He was a physicist. He did teach physics at Pierce Junior College, which isn't far from Caltech. Geographically, it's very far intellectually. I've spoken there. I've been there. He said Los Alamos had 500 pounds of element 115. No way with a half-life less than a second. And he didn't repeat that many times after I made that point. I was asked what it would take by one of his buddies to convince me about him. I said, well, scientists have diplomas. They have resumes. They publish papers. They belong to professional groups. I sent him a bunch of stuff about myself, including copies of my diplomas. And, of course, I got nothing back from Bob. Sorry. If you want to contact him, last I heard he was running a company named United Nuclear up in Michigan. He'll sell you supplies for your little lab. He's this bright guy, built a jet-powered car. It's kind of neat. He did work. His phone number's in the book at Los Alamos in the phone book, but the number's after it, K/M, Kirk Meyer Corporation. There were subcontractors. When I called the lab to ask about him, he didn't work for the lab. Worked for a subcontractor. Everybody who's at the lab has to be in the phone book. I mean, this is not a casual place, Los Alamos. And yes, I've been there. So all I can say is he's not telling the truth. And if anybody knows that he is, please show me some evidence. You know, and I've talked to George Knapp, who was boosting him for a while. George cooperated. He told me what high school and so forth, and checked on him. And so I did all I could. Part of it, I will admit, I was angry because I was valedictorian of my high school class. I got admitted to MIT, but couldn't afford to go. Tuition was $900 a year. Now it's $24,000, I think. So I resented Bob saying he'd gone there, because a couple of my friends who I would have been with if I'd been able to afford it went there. And it was a tough, difficult school, and they finished the course. And so I resented somebody making a claim which wasn't substantiatable. There's more to the story, but, I mean, that's enough to give you some idea. Sorry, wrong number. Other questions? Yes. What he said was, when normally when a less advanced civilization meets with a more advanced one, think of the American Indians, for example, and the Europeans, it's the less advanced one that tends to suffer. That's true. What are you saying? We have suffered? Well, I think we haven't really met with them on an equal level. We don't have monthly meetings. What's the latest problems we can work on together, folks? We know there's a book by Robert Hastings called Nukes and UFOs. They have interfered with our nuclear systems. 10 Minuteman missiles that went down at Malmstrom Air Force Base, one after the other, when a UFO showed up at the gate. It's not supposed to happen, but it did. And I've talked to the people who were involved. And there have been other cases. And it's happened in Russia, too. And they seem to be concerned about us. There was even a press conference at the Press Society in Washington about this, with testimony from officers who'd been involved in this stuff. So they seem to be paying attention to us. Anybody be crazy not to? We're the scourge of the neighborhood, or we can expect to be if we get out there. Look at our track record. More than 50 million killed in World War II. 1,700 cities destroyed. We're spending $1 trillion this year on things military. We're not nice guys. Nobody in his right mind would want us out there. How many kids died yesterday from preventable disease and starvation while we spent $1 trillion this past year on things military? That's not a trivial question. So I don't think we're nice guys. And I think everybody in the neighborhood would be keeping their eyes open for any scourges like us. As soon as we get to the point where we know about nuclear fusion and can produce it ourselves, we are a threat, because it can be used for propulsion as well as for destruction. 10 million times as much energy per particle going out the back end as in a chemical rocket. We can get to the stars. Expensive? Sure. Nuclear weapons were expensive, too. Lots of money. So yeah, we won't benefit. We may try to from the wreckage at Roswell and the wreckage at several other places, Aztec, Varginha in Brazil, other places. But I don't think the aliens are helping us. Look, you don't give a three-year-old a loaded gun to play with. Well, except you're in Texas, but I mean, sorry. Question, yes. That's like saying, which of your kids is the best kid? Obviously, Roswell and the Hill case intrigued the heck out of me. But I'm also intrigued by the physical trace cases, and I'm intrigued by the case I mentioned earlier with Jim McDonald and investigated with the RB-47 with a six-man crew of highly trained military people. The sighting lasted for an hour. They saw it. They saw it on their radar. The ground radar saw them and the UFO. It circled around the airplane, which is a pretty neat trick at high speed. They picked up a signal from the darn thing, which was really scary. That is a very exciting case, and Jim talked to all six of the crew members. We got a lot of those military pilot kind of cases. The Lieutenant Coyne case in Ohio. Helicopter crew, army guys, saucer comes toward them, green light, their copter got lifted up quite a bit, went on about its business. Those guys were experienced crew members, and there were ground witnesses to see this happen, which is intriguing. You know, I like serving military people. They lie with great risk to themselves. You know what I mean? They can't just get casually make remarks. They'll be held accountable. So there are a lot of cases like that. There's some other abduction cases, which you'll be hearing more about. Kathy Marden, who did most of the work on Captured, is working on a second book about abductions and has a couple of very good cases in it. These guys are doing, they're grabbing us and looking at us and examining us, and who knows what the hell they're doing with the data, but it's going on. Maybe they're trying to find the genetic defect in Earthlings that makes them so darn warlike and nasty. I don't know. Maybe they want it for themselves. Who knows? Yes. Well, I've heard there's a lot of stories around about Chihuahua, Mexico. I'll have to talk to my Mexican-American colleagues. Noe, where are you? Oh, well, that's different. Dugway is not in southern Utah. Yeah, that's not Dugway, because that's in the north. Look, there is the base right next to Las Vegas. What's the name of the air base right there? Nellis Air Force Base, yes. And who knows what all goes on there and in all the other places. The government's got plenty of classified bases. They have every right to do that. What they have found out about aliens, they ain't telling us, that's for sure. So I can't enlighten you. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Show it to me later. Question. Are they what? Safe, yes. There's over 400 nuclear reactors in the world, and yes, they're safe. They've got a darn good record, and don't tell me about Fukushima. The earthquake did a lot of damage, but the tsunami got rid of the fuel for the backup fuel systems. Bad deal all the way around. But nuclear power plants are safe. What was that first one about? Crop circles. Yes, there are crop circles in the world. Some of them are made by Doug and Dave, was it? Those two guys in England who claimed they went all over making them. Nancy's name? A woman has done a lot of work on crop circles, has come up with some interesting things. And the fact, sometimes they're made so quickly, you can't figure out how we could have done it. So what their overall significance is, I don't know, because I don't have a really good picture of what's going on. There are crop circles. I've stood in one, as a matter of fact. I didn't feel any special tingling or anything like that. So they're there. Let people who are interested do their studies and publish their results, and we'll take it from there. That's all I can say. The Bermuda Triangle is a region where strange things have happened, as is the rest of the world, a region where strange things have happened. There are a lot of idiots sailing their boats out in the Bermuda Triangle, not allowing for the fact that the weather changes very quickly. And if you're not a really good sailor, you're going to be in trouble. Sorry. You know, unpreparedness is one of the major things of the amateur who takes to the waters. So I don't make a big deal about the Bermuda Triangle. Yes, there have been some ships that have gone down, as there have been in the rest of the world. But when you find out that people are taking a yacht out in the Bermuda Triangle using a shell oil road map of Florida to navigate with, they're asking for trouble. And some of them get it. Did I see a hand over there? Yeah. Well, okay. Yes, people do make the mistake Dr. Hynek used to. He said if the thickness of one playing card represents the distance from the moon to the Earth, then it would take umpteen miles of playing cards to represent the distance to the nearest star. That's thinking linear. Twice as far takes twice as long. Space travel isn't linear. When you go to the moon, if you could double the velocity when you shut off the rocket, you get there 20 times as fast. Because the force going up versus the force coming down, it's the difference that gets you there. The difference. Look, if you're in business to make a profit and you're collecting 60 cents and your costs are, let's say, 40 cents. I've got this confused for a minute, but you get the idea. A small difference in your cost makes a big difference in the profit because it's the difference between the total money and what you're spending. So by watching your P's and Q's, you can increase profit much more than the percentage that you increase either the sales or decrease the cost. It's the difference between the two. So when you're in space, yes, it isn't linear. No, it's just good engineering work, that's all. Look, when the guy who made the calculations, the astronomer who made the calculations of what the initial launch weight of a rocket to the moon would be, he concluded it would be a million tons. We did it with something that weighed 3,000 tons. He made every possible wrong assumption about how we went about doing it. And if you do that, you're going to be in trouble. The engineer makes the right assumption and uses cosmic freeloading. That's my phrase for, you know, when we've got a spacecraft out at Saturn right now, and we sent it past Venus, which is closer to the sun than Saturn, so it would go past the Earth, get a free kick at Venus, get another kick here, get another one at Jupiter, and go up there. Get whatever you can from Mother Nature. All our deep space probes do that. And if you don't, you're going to pay a heck of a price for it. But any smart engineer takes advantage of what's available. I mean, if you got a heavy load, when you're up on the top of a mountain, you'll ski down with or send it down on its own. Somebody's going to come along and say, well, you didn't do that right. Oh, I'll carry it back up and try again. That's kind of silly. You take advantage of Mother Nature. That's why we have launch windows. At certain times, we can get free energy, in quotes, from the planets. The moon does have a gravitational field. Jupiter does kick along your little rocket going by at no cost to you, be in the right place at the right time. So being clever is much more important than being powerful, muscle-wise. One of Friedman's laws. Yes. I don't know of any correlation between the religions and aliens. I will say this. I heard a great paper by a couple from the University of Delaware. They looked at 11 old civilizations and their stories, and all of them had stories of beings coming down in spacecraft, not gods, crew and craft. And, you know, when all of them, and they found people who spoke the old language and stuff like that. So apparently it's part of our history on this planet that there have been alien visitors. And if you look at artwork from the Middle Ages, what the heck is that saucer doing there in those pictures? I'm not saying they weren't in somebody's imagination, but there's a lot of those pictures, drawings, not photographs, of course. So religion, I recommended earlier, recommend another book, The Bible and Flying Saucers by Dr. Barry Downing. Bachelor's in, you want an odd combination, Bachelor's of Physics and Doctor of Divinity. And that's Barry. And he's a very sharp guy. He's a consultant to MUFON. His problem is he can't get any clergymen to talk to him about this stuff. He goes through the Old and New Testament. They don't want any part of this. The government, who's trying to control how money gets spent on advanced military stuff, benefits considerably from having us not be aware that there are advanced civilizations coming here using advanced technology. People in power want to stay in power. Simple statement, but the basis of much of what goes on this planet. So I think they benefit. And also, they don't have to admit they've been lying all this time. Nobody wants to say, oh, well, we haven't told you the truth for 60 years about this. Or is it 65 now, I guess? But you know, trying to account for why people in government do what they do is not always an easy thing to do, because it doesn't always make sense. But I'm saying they benefit, and maybe companies who get special contracts to do classified work. The black budget gets variously estimated. That's not under direct congressional evaluation. $30 to $40 billion a year. That's a lot of money being dispensed to people, which might go elsewhere if we knew what was going on. I don't speak for the government. You understand that. You may have noticed that I am not pretending to speak for the government. Well, I do know Eric Von Daniken. I like him, as a matter of fact. We've met several times. He's sharper than a lot of his critics are, as a matter of fact. Black holes definitely exist. And how many there are, we don't know. But they're one of many things that we didn't know to be real, say, 100 years ago. The kicker here is we are ignorant. I guess somebody said that in, what's the cartoon? We are ignorant, that kind of thing. What we have come to realize is a heck of a lot that we're just finding out about that somebody more advanced than we are would have known a long time ago. Sorry, that's the way it is. So black holes are real, and there's a lot of them out there. That's interesting. I worry more about supernova. One of those comes around in the neighborhood, and we're dead meat. One of those goes off. Every advanced civilization is going to be looking for a place to stay when the going gets rough, whether it's an asteroid that maybe took care of the dinosaurs. You know, we forget, they were around for, what, 65 million years? How long has man been ruling the roost? A few thousand years? They're more advanced than we are, weren't they? At least they didn't spend their budgets killing each other. Yeah, the dark planet that's going to destroy us all. And there have been stories like this for a very long time. I haven't found anything to support them. And let's face it, there are a lot of guys looking out there. It's a great discovery if you find an extra body in the solar system and stuff like that. And I haven't seen one bit of evidence that there is such a vehicle out there, a planet, planetoid. Now, I will say this. We used to think you could only have planets associated with stars. It turns out there are some planets drifting around, rogue planets. Okay, that's a nice way to put it. So I'm not saying there's nothing that could happen. I'm saying I think we know about it already, because it would have disturbed the orbits of the other planets. And we're making a lot of measurements all the time and predicting where things will be and so forth. And there's a lot of astronomers looking. You're going to be looking out tonight, I guess. I don't know. What's the sky like out there tonight? Anybody know? Cloudy? Sorry. Okay, I think that winds it up. Thank you so much for being such a great audience. Thank you.